Welcome back to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm Steven Miranda. On Tuesday, September 9th, 2014, episode 10.13, the Week 1 Recap Show. Football is finally here and Week 1 is in the books, my people. I'll discuss the Ray Rice fiasco and the fallout from the commissioner and the NFL. The Buffalo Bills are getting sold. Houston, we have a problem. Graham Gano goes kicking it with the band, and the fans strike first as I lose the week and the challenge game to the people. Plus, I'll quickly look back at all 16 games. Week 1 is over, but you know what? It only gets better from here. Let's chop it in!
Continuing to bring American football to the world, it's Steven Miranda with NFL Rants and Raves.
Oh, my goodness, people. I cannot get enough of football. Week 1 had a lot of ups, a lot of downs, a lot of craziness, things I never thought I would imagine I would have seen. Teams winning out of nowhere. I only missed 5 games, but it seems like I missed so many more because I lost Monday Night Football, the final game of the week, to Chargers in the final minutes of the game. I lost 2 other games, New Orleans and Chicago, in overtime. So of the 5 games I missed, there were only 2 where I absolutely did not get it close. I wasn't even in the ballpark. The Chiefs getting blown out by Tennessee and Dallas not even showing up to play football in Week 1. Those are the only 2 games I outright just was wrong on, did not have a clue. That lets you know I am focused. And even though the fans, thanks to Jeremy Parker, that's right, who put in the picks for the fans this week, knocked me out in both the challenge game and in the overall week. I'll get to that in a moment. First, I want to talk about the survivor pool and thank everybody who joined in. There were 199 entries into the survivor pool. I will not discuss the size of the pool, if you know what I mean, on air. Send me an email and you will be getting emails from the website. But it is a very nice pool. 72 people got knocked out. 72! Just like that,
boom,
boom, out of here. You're out. See you later. Don't come back.
Boom.
I'm sorry, Al. You're my buddy, and you only had 1 entry, and you're out in Week 1. It hurts. I know. I still have all 3 of my entries in. I had the Lions, the Steelers, and the Jets. I did not take the Philadelphia Eagles because I was so pulling for the upset, and for a half of football, it looked like I might get my wish, but sadly I did not. Also, I just want to thank all of the people who are continuing to donate to the show. I can't say enough. I really appreciate that you guys continue to think about me and the show and donating to keep the show moving on. Once again, thank you. I'm going to be sending out some very nice emails to some of you guys who have been very generous over the last couple weeks. You know who you are. Thank you for continuing to donate. If you have not donated, please feel free to come out to the website up on the top in the nav bar up in the right corner. There is a support the show button. You can give a donation to the show. It really helps keep it going. So there you go. Thank you to all who have done so. And let's get going. We'll start in the news. The biggest news right now, I think every news outlet, whether it be a sports outlet or just a news outlet, opens with the Ray Rice fiasco. And Monday morning, as I was trying to kind of get right from the weekend, TMZ Sports released a video of Ray Rice punching his then fiance, now wife, in an elevator. That video was brutal. It was pretty brutal. And all I've got to say is, It was just as brutal and violent as I pictured it in my mind. Because prior to this, we only saw the video from outside of the elevator when he's kind of dragging her out unconscious. What that video did is it prompted the Baltimore Ravens to release the running back, and they cut and basically just terminated the contract of running back Ray Rice. And then shortly after that, the league announced that they were suspending Ray Rice indefinitely. And so where we stand now is after the league had only suspended him for 2 games, they have now decided that he is gone for good. What that means is that he is probably done in the NFL. With the Ravens just deciding to just cut ties with him, sure, he could sign with another team, but that's just toxic right now. I don't think there's another team in the National Football League that would try to sign him. Commissioner Roger Goodell has said that prior to a team contacting Ray Rice or trying to solicit his services, he would have to have a meeting with the commissioner. That team would have to have a meeting with the commissioner. Ray Rice would have to have a meeting with the commissioner. And there probably would be a longer suspension due. Now, this was all because of this footage that was released by TMZ and the leagues and the Baltimore Ravens saying that they have never and they had never seen that video. Now, according to Roger Goodell and the Baltimore Ravens, they are saying that they reached out to try and get this video, but that video was never granted to them, so they never saw it. As a matter of fact, Commissioner Goodell said, we had not seen any videotape of what occurred in the elevator, Goodell told the CBS Evening News. We assumed that there was a video, and we asked for anything that's pertinent, but we were never granted that opportunity. He said later on, I don't know how TMZ or any other website gets this, their information. We are particularly reliant on law enforcement. That's the most reliable, it's the most credible, and we don't seek to get that information from sources that are not credible. So I think the league knows that they're getting reamed right now. It's true. I on my website, I said, look, two things happen. Either they saw the video and they're now telling us that they didn't, which makes them liars, or they didn't really try to get the video that hard, which makes them incompetent. Now, either way you slice it, it's not very good for the league. You can't make your decision on suspending a player for 2 games if you have not seen all of the evidence. So, what did they think was going to be on that video? Her slipping and falling down or something? Or him kind of shoving her against the elevator door and she hit her head and got unconscious? What were they expecting to see other than the brutality that we saw on the video that was released by TMZ? I'm not sure what they were expecting. But the minute it was out and the minute that there was backlash from the skajillions of fans who watch and are entertained by the National Football League, everybody reacted. And I think Jim Rome said it best, and I almost never quote Jim Rome, but I will today. And he said the league and the Ravens didn't do this because they were outraged. They did this because we were outraged. That's right. We, the fans and the media, kind of were outraged that he got 2-game suspension based on that video. That was pretty brutal. Now, I understand Ray Rice, his now wife, Janae, they've come out and they've spoken. I think she posted something on her Instagram saying that she wishes people would just leave her family alone and give them privacy. Ray Rice saying he has to stay strong for his wife and his family. And yeah, I understand that they believe it's private, but when you are beating somebody in public, that's not a private matter, Janae. That video is in the public realm. and it's out there. We saw that your now husband brutally attacked you. The fact that law enforcement in the casino and in the city of Atlantic City didn't do anything to this guy but offer him a quick plea deal of you take some counseling, we'll make sure this all goes away, and it, as a matter of fact, we'll get expunged from your record. That's how it went down. So I think there was a problem with the legal system. I think there was a problem with the way the National Football League and Commissioner Goodell went about doing their investigation. That certainly needs to get shored up. I think that there was a problem with the way the Baltimore Ravens handled things. At the end of the day, did they get it right? Yes. Right now, I believe they got it right. He needs to go away for a while. He needs to take care of his personal business, and he needs to get that done. But did we need the video to come out for them to get it right? I don't think so. I think they should have gotten it right weeks ago, maybe even months ago, and I think that they've waited a little too late. Fortunately, I guess it's never too late to do the right thing, and I think that's what they've done here. And I wish Ray Rice and his family the best. I know that you're gonna, they're going to go through some hard times before it gets better for them. But I think as far as the National Football League is concerned, they did the right thing. Let's move on to the Buffalo Bills. Hello, Buffalo. I got some good news for you over there in the Buffalo area. The Buffalo Bills are in agreement to get bought. Terry Pegula and the Pegula family, he is the owner of the Buffalo Sabres, have agreed in principle to buy the Buffalo Bills. NFL media insider Ian Rappaport says that the team will be sold for, are you ready for this, people? $1.4 billion. That's billion with a B. $1.4 billion. Two sources have confirmed that information. Now, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, you're loving life. This guy already owns a team in the Buffalo area, the Sabres. And everybody is a winner. Everybody's happy. The Wilson Trust, they get a huge chunk of change, $1.4 billion. Terry Pegula and his family are happy. They are now owners in the National Football League. And then the Buffalo Bills fans, they have to be happy because they have a new owner. He's going to keep the team in Western New York. He's already said that. And he's a billionaire who will spend money on a football team that sometimes hasn't been had money spent on it. So everything is looking cheeky and coming out roses for the Buffalo Bills, not to mention, which we'll get into a little bit later in the show, they won a game. They won the season opener on the road. We'll talk about that. Happy days for the Buffalo Bills. Congratulations to Terry Pegula and the Pegula family. And let's see, hopefully he does good things with the Buffalo Bills. Time to move on to Houston. Houston, we have a problem. No, there's no spaceships up in space that are going to get, you know, explosions or astronauts going to die. Not that crucial. But the Houston Texans do have a problem. The number one pick for the Houston Texans this year, and the number one overall pick in the entire National Football League, is going to be missing some time. Jadeveon Clowney suffered a torn meniscus, and the prognostication right now is that he will miss 4 to 6 weeks, possibly more. They're saying right now that Clowney believes he suffered the injury when he stepped in a huge hole in the turf at Reliance Stadium. Now, that's not good. That's not good when your own turf in your stadium is it's causing injuries. And it not only just injured any player, it injured your number one player. So it's certainly bad news for the Houston Texans. They still were able to handle the Washington Redskins. We'll talk about that in a little bit and get the win. But you have to be concerned if you're the Houston Texans that the ground crew and the building is just not looking good if there's a hole in the turf at NRG Stadium. So we'll see how that plays out, and hopefully Mr. Clowney can get back on the football field good. One thing I've always wanted to see, and one thing that I'm a big proponent of every time I talk about the National Football League and players and teams, is that I want to see the best players for the best teams out on the football field. I don't want them to miss guys due to injury or due to suspension. So this is bad news for Clowney, and it's certainly bad news for the Houston Texans. The good news for Houston is they won their first game, and the defense looked pretty good in doing it even after Clowney went down. So we'll see what happens next. Finally, all I've got to say is kickers. Ah, yes, it wouldn't be a NFL Rants and Raves show without the mentioning of kickers. Graham Gano, the kicker for the Carolina Panthers, needs his practice. And apparently he needs his practice so much that he means to shove band members out of the way just so that he can get in his practice kicks during the game between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. While there were the halftime band was out there on the field doing its thing, well, Graham Gano needed to get out there and practice his kicks, and, you know, there was a trombone player in the way. And you know what? Trombone players always get in the way. Go back and watch the old Stanford video with the lateral back and forth and the whoop and the lateral, and the band gets on the field. And who does he run over at the end? A trombone player. Well, that's what Graham Gano did. He kind of pushed the trombone player out of the way because they're always getting in the way. Made his practice kicks. News has come out, though, that Gano kind of did feel bad a little bit, and he's offered the trombone player, we don't even know his name, but he's offering him tickets to the next Carolina Panthers game. So that's pretty good. I guess Gano always wanted to strike up the band and kick it with a band, and he was able to literally kick it with a band in his way. So that's it. Let's get to the week one recap, and Jeremy Parker representing the fans. Congrats to Jeremy Parker and the fans for getting on the board early with the overall weekly wins and the challenge game. I finished at 11-5. Jeremy, representing the fans this week, finished at 12-4. Thanks mostly in courtesy by that 18-17 win of the Arizona Cardinals on the second Monday Night Football game, where they scored with just a minute and a half left and taking a one-point lead. So that did me in the challenge game. The fans are up 1-0. There will be a link on the homepage of www.nflrandr.com. That's nflrandr.com. You can check out the fans, who the fan was that won that week, and what the challenge game was and why they picked it. So congratulations, Jeremy. I can tell you that
I am the smartest man alive.
I guess I'm going to have to get that changed to "You are the smartest man alive." But, and I may even have to change it to "a woman" if a woman is chosen at random to make picks against me. But anyways, you are the smartest man alive, Jeremy. It wasn't easy because my team didn't show up, but we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's get to week one, where the Green Bay Packers and the Seattle Seahawks opened up on Thursday Night Football. And all I've got to say is, man, the defending Super Bowl champions look good. And if it is as they claim, that it was not their best game and it was not their best tackling game, ouch. That's all I can say is ouch. They held Aaron Rodgers to 189-yard passes on 33 pass attempts. Not very good. Eddie Lacy could never get going. He rushed for 34 yards on 12 carries. Jordy Nelson was kind of irrelevant. The Green Bay Packers have a lot of work to do. Let's just put it that way. If they're going to win the division, as I see them being able to do, they've got a long way to go. Seattle Seahawks, though, they do so much with so little. outside of beast mode, Marshawn Lynch going crazy, rushing for 110 yards, two touchdowns. It looked at times that, you know, no one wanted to get in his way. Do we really want to tackle this guy? I don't think so. Move out of the way, let him score. That's how it looked like sometimes. But 110 yards, averaged 5.5 yards a carry. That's incredible. What else is incredible is that Percy Harvin was utilized early and often, and he was all over the field. He had four rush attempts, mostly on reverses, for 41 yards for a 10.2 average per carry. He also had another seven catches for 59 yards. He was all over the field, and if he can provide that kind of a distraction on the outside for defenses, Marshawn Lynch is going to have a huge year. Mark my words, Marshawn Lynch, huge year, all according to how Percy Harvin does in his situational packages for the Seattle Seahawks. Russell Wilson didn't have to do much. He threw for 191 yards, but two of them were touchdown passes, and that's all they needed. 36-16, a 20-point victory over Green Bay to start the season. Congratulations, Seahawks. Let's move on to Sunday. First game is one that we differed on. The New Orleans Saints at the Atlanta Falcons. Jeremy, for the fans, took Atlanta. I took the Saints. This was another game that was decided by 3 points by two division rivals that know each other very well. These games seem to always be decided by a field goal at the game at the end. This was no different. Little crazy because the Saints were in cruise control mode. They had a 20-10 lead at halftime. They were up by 10 points. But in the third quarter, it was all Falcons. They scored 14 unanswered. They took a 24-20 lead. And then it was back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until at the end, Matt Bryant kicked a 51-yard field goal to tie it, send the game into overtime, 34-34. Saints get the ball first. Moving down the field, Drew Brees hits Marcus Colston. Looks like he's going to break it, but instead, boom, stripped, fumble. Atlanta gets the ball, kicked a 52-yard field goal, 37-34 winners at home. They hand Drew Brees and the Saints a loss that looked like what in the world happened to that Saints defense. That Saints defense that was supposed to be a pretty good defense. Remember, Rex Ryan, his brother Rob Ryan, now coaching that defense. They had a lot of success last year. Well, this year, they start out by giving up 568 yards. That's right, you heard me correctly. Over 500 yards of offense to the Atlanta Falcons. That right now puts the New Orleans Saints defense at the bottom of the barrel with the worst defensive stats for week one. They are dead last, giving up a heck of a lot of defense. Over 500 yards against those 568 yards of total defense given up to the Atlanta Falcons. Now, the Atlanta Falcons aren't that much better. They're 30th. They gave up 472. But the only team to give up over 500 yards of offense, that was the New Orleans Saints. Look, you know, Rob Ryan, Rex Ryan, they come from a defensive-minded family. They're very good at what they do. But sometimes if you don't have the players buy into your schemes and understand, most importantly, understand your schemes, it's just not going to work. They kept giving up big play after big play. It didn't look very good. Atlanta was able to convert six times out of 11 tries on third down. I don't even know what to say. I'm a little disappointed. I thought the Saints were ready for a big bounce back year, but it's not to be. So they lose 37-34 in overtime. This is one of those games where, look, I don't feel that bad. I picked New Orleans. They lost by three in overtime. Yes, it's still a loss, but at the end of the day, it's a loss that could have gone either way. It just didn't go my way on that one. So congratulations to Jeremy and the fans for picking up a game there. Cincinnati at Baltimore. This is one that we both picked correctly, and I'm very happy about it. I told you that the Bengals were coming out like this.
with the Bengal growling. Lean and angry, here he comes a crawling. Lean and hungry and offensive brute. But pants or boots, and defensively he's rough. Top Cincinnati Bengals, that's the team we're gonna cheer to victory.
Touchdown Bengals,
get some points up on that board and win a game for Cincinnati.
Win the game for Cincinnati, they did. They came out. They served notice to the AFC North. We are the Bengals. This is our year. We believe in Andy Dalton. We're going to get it done. Sure, we had to probably kick a little more field goals than we wanted to, but at the end of the game, we got the W, and we took it over the Ravens. Now we got to win a couple more games in this division to truly show that this division is ours. It was a 23-16 victory. At some point, the Baltimore Ravens are going to realize you can't cover A.J. Green with just one guy. You just cannot do it. So that's what happened there. Once again, 23-16, A.J. Green with a huge touchdown pass reception in that game. He kind of bobbled it a little bit, hauled it in, and then weaved his way into the end zone. 23-16, Baltimore climbed back into the game. It looked like they were out of it. They tried to make a game of it, but in the end it was a little too little, a little too late, and it's tough losing your home opener, especially against a division rival. The Buffalo Bills at Chicago Bears. This is another one of those games where, you know what, I don't feel that bad that I lost it. The Buffalo Bills won in overtime, 23-20. We both took Chicago. Chicago was at home. Look, you're going to take the Bears. 42 people in the survivor pool took the Bears. They got knocked out when Buffalo kicked the field goal in OT. Look, the Bills came. They came to play. They certainly were no slouches. Apparently, E.J. Manuel had a fiery speech, even though he, you know, didn't do much. He only completed 16 passes out of 22 attempts, 173 yards. Did have that one touchdown. Fred Jackson, you know, I guess he heard that Steven Miranda didn't think he was a leader or something like that. He came out and he led the rushing attack, 61 yards on 7 carries for a whopping 8.7 yards per carry average. That's pretty good. And Robert Woods, 4 catches for 78 yards. One of the leaders on the day as far as average yards per catch. Pretty impressive there. And the fact that they were able to hold just the Bears to in their own home field, I thought that they were going to come out. They were going to get Brandon Marshall involved in the game. Marshall had 8 catches for 71 yards and a touchdown, but it wasn't like he dominated the football game like I thought he might. There were actually 3 Bears in this football game that had 8 catches. Matt Forte being one of them out of the backfield. He had 87 yards there. Brandon Marshall had those 8 grabs. And tight end Martellus Bennett had 70 yards on 8 carries and also that one touchdown. But Brandon Marshall lost a fumble. That doesn't help. Jay Cutler threw 2 interceptions. That doesn't help. So at the end of the day, the Chicago Bears have really nobody to blame but themselves. They didn't get enough points, and to lose at home early in the season is not a good thing. 23-20, the final score there. Yes, Greg, I didn't give the Buffalo Bills a chance. Yes, they did win. I still don't think they're going to make a lot of noise this season. Moving on to Houston, where, as I said earlier, we have a problem. The Houston Texans don't have a problem as they get a 17-6 win over the Washington Redskins. But they had a problem and they lost Jadeveon Clowney with a torn meniscus, and he'll be out for a while. Do the Washington Redskins have to just – when do they start questioning RG3? It's not like RG3 looked horrible throwing the football. It wasn't so much his throws. It's the sacks that he took. He took some pretty bad sacks. He was in the pocket. And maybe it's just that he's just not seeing the field as clearly as he did his rookie season. But every time he tries to get away, it's not very good. He doesn't look very good. He doesn't look very comfortable trying to scramble. He was sacked 3 times for 26 yards. That's a lot of yards that's missing there. And RG3 just, it doesn't look like he is very happy with this offense. Doesn't have command of it. Alfred Morris rushed for 91 yards, but it wasn't enough. It was over 14 carries, I believe. Didn't get a lot of other stuff in the ground game there. I think RG3 with his 267 yards passes, no touchdowns, no INTs, just didn't look good. The Redskins on special teams, they had a block punt. They just they were all over the place, and they only managed 2 field goals. That's not going to get it done in the NFL. 17-6 the final there for the Houston Texans. Even though they got the win, they did get some bad news. Hopefully they can maintain until Clowney comes back in about 4 to 6 weeks. We'll move on to Kansas City, where both Jeremy and I took the Chiefs, and boy, were we wrong. What's with the delayed bell, dude? Come on, hit the bell. Hit it. All right, the Kansas City Chiefs just can't seem to do much right early on in this football game. Jamaal Charles, he was one of those guys that was drafted either first, second, or third in fantasy football circles. He was limited. And saying he was limited, that's being nice. 19 yards on 7 carries. Alex Smith, believe it or not, the quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs, had more rushing yards, 36 rushing yards on his 6 carries than Jamaal Charles. Tennessee came out and they had a plan. They were like, look, we're going to limit the Kansas City offense. We're not going to let them get in a rhythm. We're not going to let them run the ball on us. And if we can do that, we'll score some points. They took a 10-3 halftime lead. And I was like, well, you know what, maybe Kansas City will wake up in the second half. They didn't. They managed a touchdown late in the fourth quarter. At that point, it was done. It was over. Tennessee built a 20-3 lead, wound up winning 26-10. And I said going into this week one, and I said it all off season, I wish I would have seen more Tennessee Titans games. It was a team that I felt I did not know very well. I didn't spend much time looking at them. They're not very sexy. They got Jake Locker at quarterback. And, you know, he was serviceable, 266 yards, 22 of 33 for 2 touchdowns. Rushing the ball, they have a combination of McCluster, Sean Green, Bishop Sankey. They all had carries. Sean Green going for 71 yards on 15 rush attempts. At the wide receiver position, Wright, Washington, Hunter, Walker, not a lot of sexy names. I just didn't see enough from Tennessee to think that they would be able to go into Arrowhead and beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, Kansas City, they got to be scratching their heads. They didn't do a lot right. They got down, they scored her, they moved the ball early, got a 35-yard field goal. And then there's just not much they could do after that. It was 23-3 before they even got in the end zone in the fourth quarter. And by then, it was too little, too late. Once again, big question marks for the Kansas City Chiefs. Where do they go from here? Especially if you look at the Kansas City Chiefs' schedule and go into the next couple of weeks, they go to Denver to play the Broncos. That's a loss. They go to Miami. That's my team that I'm liking this year. And they certainly proved that they're worthy after the way they trounced the New England Patriots. That's a loss. And then they host the New England Patriots. Now, the Patriots got handled, especially Tom Brady. He was rattled by the pressure that Cameron Wake and the Miami Dolphins applied. Will Kansas City be able to get some? I'm not sure. But then after New England, they got the San Francisco 49ers at San Francisco before they head into their week 6 bye. It is very conceivable And you remember you heard it here first. And I know I'll get the emails from Kansas City Chiefs fans. But going into that Week 6 bye, the Kansas City Chiefs are 0-5. That is not without, just after seeing them play against Tennessee, it is now at the realm of, it is within the realm of possibility. Denver, at Miami, New England, at San Francisco, they could be staring at 0-5 right smack dab in the face. And if that happens, it's going to be a long season for the Chiefs. Moving on, the New England Patriots, selected by Jeremy and the fans, and the Miami Dolphins, selected by yours truly. What a game that was. So there's a particular New England Patriots fan that, I don't know, we've mentioned from time to time. Hello, Katie. I'm talking to you right now. I'm talking to you right now, my dear, little Katie Harris, who was just, she, on Facebook, she IM'd me on Facebook, and she sent me this little, a face of this little man that was angry, and his face is all scrunched up, and his red cheeks, and is just angry. And so I replied back, What happened? What did I do? And she didn't reply for the longest time. But then she told me that, you know, she couldn't believe that I was going against the Patriots again. And it was pretty crazy. It started bad for the Patriots, a 0-0 tie deep in their own territory. They go to punt the ball on fourth down, and they get blocked. I mean, There were a lot of block. Now that I'm thinking back on this weekend, there were a heck of a lot of block punts in this weekend on all the games. Gronkowski got in the end zone, scored a touchdown, and at one point New England was up 17-7, and I was like, oh, my gosh, the route is on. How could I have been so wrong? But New England came back, and I was so right. The touchdown pass from Tannehill to Mike Wallace certainly played a big deal into that. Brady getting hit, knocked around, and fumbling the football, giving the ball back to the Miami Dolphins deep in their own territory when the Dolphins were losing 20-13, certainly was a changing point in the game. All I have to say for New England is if you can't find a way to protect Tom Brady, who, by the way, friends, is on the older, he's the older side of quarterbacking. He is getting up there in age. If you can't protect him, he is not going to be able to tear defenses apart. And if you can't tear defenses apart, New England Patriots are going to struggle all year. It's going to be a long season. So, Katie, I hope you're all right. But Tom Brady can't get knocked around. And the fact that Katie and her husband came all the way from England just to see that nonsense, they were in Miami for the game. Not a pretty game for the Patriots. And when it's 23-20 and Tom Brady overthrows a wide-open Julian Edelman, you know that something's not right. It just didn't get to – the pressure got to him. You know, I think he saw Cameron Wake in his dreams. Key third-down conversions for the Miami Dolphins. Ryan Tannehill, I think, grew up in this football game. It's a 3rd-and-5. Late in the fourth quarter when it was 23-20, 23-20, and it was 3rd-and-5, and he was able to somehow get the Miami Dolphins and will the Miami Dolphins into the end zone, and it was all Miami in the second half. The Patriots took a 20-10 lead in the halftime, and they never scored again. They were outscored 23-0 in the second half, as the Dolphins embarrassed the New England Patriots. So that was one I picked up on the fans. And I just have to say, Katie, and to all the other Patriots fans, the Empire might be coming to an end. We'll move on to New York, where the New York Jets hosted the Oakland Raiders. And, oh, my gosh, the Oakland Raiders, they don't even know how to lose correctly. I say that because the Jets were favored to win by 5.5. They won by 5 because they let Oakland score a cheap, meaningless, nothing touchdown late in the game just so that they can get in. But, look, the Jets defense, like I knew, they were going to be all over Derek Carr, the rookie who made his rookie debut in New York. That was not fair for the kid. I can't believe that the Oakland Raiders did that to him. Let's go to New York. You know, he threw a touchdown pass early in that game, and he was like a kid in a candy store, just jumping up and down like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, a touchdown. It's like, it's the first quarter of 16 games, dude. Relax. But in the end, the Jets applied just too much pressure. Kid looked lost sometimes. Raiders offense just didn't look like they could compete with the Jets. It's not like Geno Smith and the offense of the Jets were great. They were just so-so. And Geno still, he's the quarterback for the New York Jets and throws passes in the areas where he shouldn't be throwing them. But somehow they managed to get a 19-14 win, and that is all that matters. The Raiders are going to folks, I'm telling you, Raiders fans, Raider Nation, I got no ill will towards you, but you're in for a long season. It's going to be a long season. Let the rookie learn. Let him make mistakes. See what happens, all right? 19-14, the Jets, too. I think they're going to be in for a long season as well if Geno Smith continues to force things the way he did against the Raiders. He threw an interception. He fumbled the ball once on a scramble. They had Mike Vick in as a wide receiver at one point. They had him in for one pass. I'm not a big fan of bringing a quarterback in for one play. The Jets tried it, and, that's the New York Jets for you. I just, think against a better opponent, that stuff's not going to fly. Worked against the Raiders. It won't work against other teams. Moving to Philadelphia, where the Eagles had a scare. Both Jeremy and I took the Philadelphia Eagles, and for a moment, actually for an entire half, it turns out, we all were in trouble. I mean, survivor pool people all over the world, they were like, oh, my God, what's going on? The Jacksonville Jaguars are dominating. Seriously, you looked away and you looked up and the Jaguars were scoring again. They were scoring at will, 17-0 at one point. But in the end, the Philadelphia Eagles came roaring back after losing at halftime 17-0. They scored 34 unanswered in the second half to get the win there. And we both survived and everybody in the survivor pool survived. And we'll move on to the Cleveland Browns traveling to Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, all I can say about this is it's time for my annual rant about going for the kill. And it always seems to be directed at the Pittsburgh freaking Steelers. When you have a team down and you are killing them 27-3. That was the halftime score, by the way. Pittsburgh 27, Cleveland 3. You do not ease up. You don't ease off the gas pedal. You even put the pedal down even further, and you go for the jugular, and you put teams away. No, this has nothing to do that I was in a reputable establishment where you could put down a friendly wager, and I had the Pittsburgh Steelers to easily cover the 6.5 points that they were favored by. They were rolling. 27-3 at the half. You're dominating and you're in complete control. And then you come out in the second half and you try to get cute. You let the Cleveland Browns score 14 points right off the bat. Then the next thing you know, it's 27-17. It's a 10-point game. Cleveland keeps coming. They eventually tie it 27-27, and you need some miraculous plays there at the end of the game to come in and kick a field goal, a 41-yard Shewisham field goal to win the football game. Finish the team off. You got a 3-point win when you should have dominated this football game and won by 20. It was very disappointing by the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I'll just come back to my earlier statements against the Cincinnati Bengals. You play like that against Cincinnati, you will lose. You will lose. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, in the end, do get the win. Ben Roethlisberger throws for 365 yards. Sorry about that. 365 yards, one touchdown pass. Le'Veon Bell did a lot of damage, 109 yards on 21 carries. He had a long 38-yard scamper and a long TD. And LeGarrette Blount also scored a touchdown, a short one. And the Pittsburgh Steelers were rolling. It looked like they were going to dominate this game, but they sneak away with a 30-27 win. Moving on to St. Louis, where all I have to ask Jeremy Parker and the fans is, what were you all thinking? Minnesota crushes the Rams. 34-6 beatdown on the road, and it may be time to panic. Now, I don't want to be a part of Overreaction Monday, and it's like, oh, my God, the Rams, they got beat at home 34-6. It was awful. Offensively, we had nothing. Sean Hill was 8 of 13 for 81 yards and an interception before he left with an injury. And then Davis came in, and he, you know, Austin Davis was just, you know, what you expect a young guy to be. He's only been in the league for a couple years, 25 years old, looked a little lost at times, 16 of 23, 192, no touchdowns, and an interception. Zach Stacy could never get going, 43 yards on the ground. The Rams just were a shell of themselves offensively. You have receivers like Tavon Austin and Lance Kendricks and Cook and Brian Quick and Givens and Kenny Britt, and you just can't do a whole lot of anything. Just not good. Cordarrelle Patterson for the Minnesota Vikings. Wow. Wow. I mean, the kid was everywhere. He had three catches for 26 yards. He rushed for 107 yards. Scoring a touchdown. Matt Castle was efficient. Didn't have to do much. They didn't ask him to do much. And on a day when Adrian Peterson only rushes for 75 yards on 21 carries, the Minnesota Vikings dominate and get a 34-6 win. It may be time for the St. Louis Rams to, ring the bell. All right, coming to the challenge game. The game that made Jeremy Parker.
I am the smartest man alive.
You are the smartest man alive. I don't know what I was thinking. I obviously thought, you know, the Cowboys offense is humming. They will score a lot of points, make San Francisco get into a track meet. The 49ers won't be able to sustain that pace with an offense that's struggling. And I took Dallas. And Jeremy Parker says, well, I'll take San Francisco because that's my team. So there you go. I mean, that's his analysis, and he won. So the San Francisco 49ers go into AT&T Stadium, and although they allow DeMarco Murray to rush for over 118 yards and a touchdown, that was all too little too late, as they rolled early, forced Tony Romo into some bad, bad interceptions. Murray fumbled in the first 2 minutes of the game. It was picked up by the Niners and taken for a touchdown. So before you could blink, it was 7-0 San Francisco. Dallas was in chase mode every minute after that. And they just could never get back into it. It was just too much. The final score, 28-17. If there are any positives to take away, if you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, the positive is, look, you held the 49ers scoreless in the second half, as San Francisco scored all of its 28 points in the first half, and very early, 21 in the first quarter by because of the interceptions and some of the silly plays, the fumble by DeMarco Murray. It was 21-3 before you could blink. But it seems like, you know, the Dallas Cowboys defense kind of they did some stuff there. They woke up. On the second half, they held the offense of the 49ers in check, which I believe they could. They just, their offensively, The Dallas Cowboys are not going to win games if their offense turns over the ball and doesn't score points. I believe they're an offense that could score 28 to 35 points every week, and they're going to have to do that if they're going to want to win some football games. Just so happens that, you know, three turnovers by Romo, fumble by DeMarco Murray. You turn over the ball four times in the first seven possessions that you have. You're not going to beat anybody that way. So it's going to be interesting to see how they bounce back. They got Tennessee coming up next. The San Francisco 49ers open their stadium. It's a game that I will be at covering for Sky. The San Francisco 49ers on Sunday Night Football hosting the Chicago Bears. I will be at that game, and I expect the 49ers to get their second win of the season. Final score there, 28-17. Let's see what happens to these two teams that could very well be going in opposite directions. Carolina at Tampa Bay, the Buccaneers need some help. So just when you thought that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were going to be pretty good defensively, they're just okay. And offensively, you got to say, ugh, yee, Josh McCown. That's what we got to rely on. Josh McCown, picked twice, two INTs, only throws for 183. We got nobody to run because Doug Martin got hurt, only had 9 yards rushing on 9 carries, tweaked his leg. Now they're saying, fortunately for Tampa Bay, that it's not that serious of an injury. But you got to rely on Lane and Rainey, Bobby Rainey, and who's the Lane guy? There's a young dude, Javorski Lane. He's the one who kind of got the one carry there that kind of went rumbled and stumbled for 54 yards. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers just don't look, you know, like they're ready defensively. After a couple of bad early drives that they allowed Derek Anderson, of all people, because Cam Newton wasn't able to play. Cam Newton was inactive. Derek Anderson, they made him look like an awesome quarterback. 24 of 34, 230 yards, 2 touchdowns, no INTs. Drek also rushed for another 10 yards. He hit Kelvin Benjamin. The rookie looked pretty sweet. For a touchdown. He also threw a touchdown to the tight end, Greg Olsen. Olsen, who had 11 targets in the game, targeted 11 times, caught 8 of them for 83 yards. That was pretty awesome as well. But at the end of the day, too much offense for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 20-14 win by Carolina. And Carolina, if they get Cam Newton up to speed and he gets healthy once again, they might be a little dangerous. They may cause some noise, because I'm starting to think that offensively they have just a whole bunch of weapons. They've still got D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart. Tolbert's running the ball. He contributed a little bit. It's just there's a lot of weapons there offensively. And if Cam Newton gets healthy, they may be a team to make some noise. Head down to Sunday Night Football, where the Denver Broncos hosted the Indianapolis Colts. So it was Peyton Manning going up his old team, trying to show it that he still got it. And, yeah, you know what? He still got it. The Denver Broncos took a huge lead. Actually, they were up 24-7 at the half. Once again, I believe kind of like, you know, we're just not going to embarrass anybody. We're not going to put our foot pedal to the metal. And the next thing you know, Andrew Luck throws for 370 yards, 2 touchdowns. They score 14 points, and they're right back in the game. And the Denver Broncos actually had to go out and make a couple plays in the fourth quarter and score a touchdown in the fourth quarter to win 31-24. It was a game that they were cruising. 3 touchdown passes by Peyton Manning, all to the tight end, Julius Thomas, who had 104 yards on 7 catches, and those 3 TDs. What does it say about the Denver Broncos when no receiver scores a touchdown The tight end scores three of them. They get another running touchdown from Monty Ball. And Peyton Manning only has an average game.
Yet they still win. That just shows you what good a football team the Denver Broncos are, that, you know, they don't need their signal caller to throw for 400 yards every single game, and they could still get a win. And the Indianapolis Colts have to be a little excited as well. They have to be happy that, yeah, we lost the game when we didn't start out playing really good football. But in the end, we have Andrew Luck, and he could toss it for 50 times, toss it for over 350 yards. And, you know, other teams that aren't the Denver Broncos will get wins there. So, good win for us getting the Denver Broncos, and hopefully the Indianapolis Colts will start winning some games as well with their signal caller. Two more games, both Monday Night Football, will start in Detroit, where they demolish the New York Giants. Eli Manning, is it time to panic for the New York Football Giants and their football team? Eli Manning, another two interceptions to start the year. Not as bad as last year, where he threw, what, five or six in the opening week. But he still tosses two interceptions and inopportune times. Not very good. Only tossed for 163 yards. 18 of 33 completion rate. That is also not very good. And the New York Giants just got dominated 35-14. Had no answer whatsoever for Calvin Johnson. Johnson was targeted 11 times, caught 7 passes for 164 yards, 2 touchdowns, almost had a third. It was just impressive. Joik Bell added 51 yards rushing for the Detroit Lions as well, a touchdown. Rashard Jennings got a touchdown, and Eli Manning threw a touchdown to Donnell, the tight end, who had 5 catches for 56 yards. But this was all Detroit. It was Detroit early and often. Even though the score was only 14-7 at the half, you had a sense that the Giants were just not in the football game. They had a block punt. Eli Manning just doesn't look confident, doesn't look sure. He's back to happy feet. That's what he is. He is back to being happy feet. He dances around in the pocket, throws it off balance sometimes, and it's just not good football. And what the heck is going on with Reuben Randall? This guy was supposed to step up and become this good wide receiver opposite Victor Cruz. Cruz, who only had 2 catches himself for 24 yards. It looks like Cruz, Randall, any other wide receiver, they're just not on the same page with Manning. He's like I said, his player who had the most targets was Donnell, the tight end. He had 8 targets, and that's not a wide receiver. When you're not throwing the ball often to your wide receivers, that is not a good sign. Cruz needs more targets, in my opinion. You got to throw him the football. He's your best wide receiver. You got to try and get him the ball early and often, and the New York Giants just weren't doing that. Final score, 35-14. Detroit, if the Lions play football like this all season long against every opponent, they will surprise some teams and possibly make some noise this season. Finally, the last game that we differed on, Jeremy and myself, the San Diego Chargers at Arizona Cardinals. I had Chargers on the road. He had Arizona. And, well, there you have it. 18 for Arizona, 17 for San Diego. The Chargers were kind of like dormant in the beginning. Then they erupted and they took the lead and everything was looking pretty good. And then they were dormant again and they let Arizona get back into the football game. Then Arizona scored a touchdown late. I think their final score was a touchdown pass to Brown, who he kind of scooted in. It was a short pass, 13-yard pass from Carson Palmer. They went for 2-point conversion. They failed. So it was an 18-17 game. This was with 2:25 left in the game when Arizona finally got the lead back. Arizona struck first. They scored a field goal in the second quarter to take a 3-0 lead. After that, it was all San Diego. They tied it 3-3. Arizona took the lead again on a field goal at half, right at the halftime with no time left to go to make it 6-3 at the half. San Diego comes out, scores a couple quick touchdowns in the third quarter, makes it 17-6. And then it's like they decided, you know, that's all it's going to take. We only need 17 points. A couple bad plays in the fourth quarter, bad snap over Philip Rivers' head, gives the ball back to the Arizona Cardinals. They march down the field, 11-play, 91-yard drive. Carson Palmer to Brown for the touchdown to make it 18-17. And that's all she wrote. San Diego hit it, have a chance to get in field goal range, but a series of very questionable plays by Philip Rivers and the Charger offense did not convert on fourth down, fourth and three, even though they had multiple opportunities from that spot. They ran the same play three times, and it didn't work either time. Just could not believe how that game ended, and so I lost it. Won another game. You know, it's another game that, there you go, three games where I just lose at the very end because of some questionable calls, not questionable calls from the refs, questionable calls from the offensive coordinators in the hands of the New Orleans Saints. It really wasn't the coordinators. It was Marcus Colson with a fumble. And the Bears, well, they're just on offense. They just couldn't seem to do anything late in the game. And then San Diego just could not do anything when it really mattered. And even though they had the lead for most of the night, it just never seemed like they were in control. Arizona gets the win 18-17, much to the chagrin of Larry Fitzgerald's fan, who Fitzgerald wound up with one catch for 22 yards. You got the win. And I think, you know, Larry Fitzgerald is too cool a customer, too cool a cat to not complain, only catching one football. I think today Bruce Arians came out and said that the Arizona Cardinals are past force-feeding the ball to Larry Fitzgerald. That's great. That's fine. But he's still one of the best wide receivers in the league. And if you're not getting the ball, get him out of there. Shoot. We'll take him to Dallas because the cat can still play. The fact that they're only using him as a decoy and they're throwing the ball more to Michael Floyd, that's fine. That's their prerogative. But I'm sure – and it just so happens that Larry Fitzgerald didn't say anything about it, but Papa Fitzgerald sure had plenty to say, saying that we witnessed the politics of football there. They don't want someone around, so they just don't throw in the ball. There you have it. That's his opinion. Once again, congratulations to Jeremy and the fans who get the win. They got the challenge game, making the fans...
I am the smartest man alive!
And I'll leave you with this note. 11-5 for me, 12-4 for the fans. Good week for a lot of people. I think for the fans, that's 75%. I'm at like 69%, so that's still pretty good picking. Survivor Pool Pick'ems, make sure you get out there and you make your picks. Once again, thank you for listening to NFL Rants and Raves. This has been your Week 1 recap. Week 2 preview show coming up, and I will start adding my lock of the week. I wish I would have given my lock of the week last week. It was the Minnesota Vikings plus 4.5. I was like, man, the Vikings are getting 4.5 points. They're going to win outright, and they dominated. Went on to roll the St. Louis Rams by a score of 34-6. So that was probably the best lock of the week I've ever had. As far as Pick'em, I won't give you my picks because, Survivor Pool Pick'em, I won't give you my picks because you all are picking against me. I'd like to win that gigantic pool as well. So, once again, this is Stephen Miranda. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to NFL Rants and Raves. I'm out.